Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. For more than 30 years, David Drake has traveled all over Wisconsin performing a multimedia program that tells the story of Wisconsin's history. He's been to thousands of schools, libraries, senior citizen homes, and community centers. He writes and sings of Native Americans, French explorers, European immigrants, lumberjacks, Great Lakes sailors, and he also plays a variety of handmade and historic instruments. His musical recordings also include a sing-along for young children, a collection of environmental songs, historic, original, and adapted for the Great Lakes, songs, ballads, and shanties, Irish songs, and dangerous folk music. He'll be performing live for us in our Milwaukee studios as we spend this hour being entertained and informed about Wisconsin.
Early in the morning, with the dew just forming in the grass in the greenwood tree, lead me to a lake, it's all it'll take, it's just like heaven to me. Later in the evening, with the sun just leaving, all wet and pink on the shore, lead me to lie neath a tall old pine and bother me no more. LA's got the climate, Boston's got the sea, Denver's got the Rockies, Wisconsin's got to me. Come on, all you Wisconsin folks, make us proud. LA's got the climate, Boston's got the sea, Denver's got the Rockies, Wisconsin's got to me.
David Drake, thank you, David. Nice intro to the show, and we'll hear more songs, and he'll play some remarkable instruments during the course of this hour. Thank you so much for being with us. I love the performance. You're going to be on Channel 10, I know, this coming Saturday, and it's a. I looked at your performance last night. I don't know who you were talking to, but you were captivating school children like I've never seen. You had them totally engaged in your performance.
Oh, that's half the fun. That was at Maple Grove School in Fox Point, Wisconsin, which I just played at yesterday.
Oh, you did?
That particular school has brought me in every year now for, it's got to be at least 12 years, to do the Wisconsin history section, because fourth graders in Wisconsin study the history of Wisconsin.
Ah.
And that's where I came up with the show in the first place. And they bring me in every year. Well, they have a library media pit, as opposed to doing it in a gym or something like that, which was just perfect to do the videotaping in. And I've worked with them for so long, they generously let me use their kids to do the video a year ago. And so, ironically, I went back and did the show live yesterday at
Wonderful.
The school.
I realized as I was watching this what a wonderful way this is to learn our history. And we've heard this before, but to see the response of the children and to realize that I remembered, I learned a lot watching this, that you can remember more if you put it to music and if you get mm-hmm. everybody very engaged in singing verses and adding their own verses.
Exactly. I mean, most people go, oh, history, boring. Well, the reason it's boring is it's like reading Shakespeare's plays. If you simply read the play, yeah, it's good writing, but you really should read it out loud, even if you're just reading it to yourself, and it's vastly better while it's being read by a group of people to really get the understanding and the inflection. So history is the same way. You can read about it off a page, but if you sing about it and show pictures and relate the two, that really just makes it a whole lot more exciting, and people remember stuff then.
Let's go back to when white people weren't here. It was Native Americans who lived in the state of Wisconsin. You have a beautiful instrument that you play that I believe was used for courting. Can you tell us about the instrument and then play the instrument and also talk about the history of Native American population in this state, treated pretty badly once people arrived?
All over the United States, as far as that goes. I play a Lakota courting flute, and it was made by Michael Jones, and he was living on the Stockbridge-Munsee Reservation, about 45 miles north of Green Bay, northwest of Green Bay. And he went to the Smithsonian Institution and did measurements of a flute that was maybe 200 years old from the Lakota tribe, and made me a copy is maybe not the right word, but a replica of that flute. So I'm playing a Lakota flute. Now people go, well, the Lakota tribe now is out in North and South Dakota. Well, that's because they originally they were around here, but when the European population shoved the Native Americans off of the East Coast and pushed them west, that had the effect of pushing the tribes that were here further west. So this is a woodland flute that is in the style of what would have been used maybe 200, 300 years ago.
Oh, David, that's so beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And did I read somewhere that they were only used once for many of the Native Americans?
You'd be in trouble if you used it more than one woman. The whole idea, I mean, as we all well know, young men are not good about talking about their feelings. You know, that's pretty universal. And I'm sorry, you know, even at my age, men are just not good about talking about their feelings. Okay. The Native American men were smart enough to realize this. And when you can't put your feelings into words, that's why we have music. Because if you can't put your feelings into word, perhaps you can put it into music. So if a young Native American man was interested in a young lady, he would make a flute, and generally it's to the proportions of your hands, so each one is different. Now, when somebody says, what key is it in? It's not. A key is a European invention.
Oh.
I mean, when you study, sure. You know, all them funny dots on the page, and like, that's European music. This was being played here in America long before any Europeans got here. So what we call the rules of music don't apply. Besides which, the only time you need a key is when you're playing with another player and you have to agree on what pitch that you're on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you're playing by yourself, it doesn't matter. And the whole idea is the young man would make a flute out of cedar. Cedar is important. It's a grandmother wood. It's good medicine. You'd make a flute to play for the young woman you're interested in. And generally speaking, the young man would sit outside of her lodge and play what was in his heart. And that's the key. Most music, especially off a page, you're playing with your brain. And this bypasses the brain entirely, and you play whatever is in your heart. It's not rehearsed. It's not written down. It's purely from the heart. The young woman listens to it. The young man leaves the flute outside the lodge. If she takes the flute in, it kind of means it's okay to come around.
If
she leaves it outside, it's kind of like, no, I don't think so. And to me, that is just utterly elegant.
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. There is a lot to be learned on the part of young men in terms of how to go according. I think they should be taken up by many, David.
Well, it is. I mean, actually, it's just in a different form nowadays. When I was 16, I picked up a guitar, partly because I liked music, but, mm-hmm. You know, I want to impress the girls.
Did you?
Of course.
Did it work?
Yeah. I promised my wife that I will not play this flute with the original intent, except for her.
Yeah. It is just beautiful. That's a wonderful, mm-hmm. wonderful story,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah. And to me, that's part of the – when you teach history, it's not just about dates and names and generally battles, which is so much of our history, but it's about people actually living and breathing and, you know, going through the process of simply creating that history – that we now look back on and go, oh, yeah, you know, lead miners came to Wisconsin in 1820. Yeah, well, the reason we're called the Badgers is not because we had a bunch of fuzzy little critters running around. It's because when a lead miner came out of the hole in the ground, at the end of the day, he was pretty grouchy and dirty, like a badger.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You have a lead miner song.
Yes, I do.
Could you sing that for us?
I'll do a little bit of it. It's kind of long, but okay. I'll do a couple of verses.
Okay.
This one I wrote myself because there are a few existing lead mining songs from Wisconsin history, but they're not terribly – they really don't work for a show like this. So I had to write my own in this case. And I went to the Bevins Mine, which is behind the Rollo Jamison Museum in Platteville, Wisconsin. I took the tour. And this is a songwriter trick. I took the tour, and as the tour guide was stating the vocabulary that the gobwalling is the till, and that the miners were generally Cornish. Well, in the very first line, I call the miner Will Penrose, which is a dead giveaway to somebody who's listening that he's a Cornish miner.
Mm-hmm.
So that's – and then when I came out of the mine, I sat in the car and wrote the song down. My name is Will Penrose. I am a lead miner. In southwest Wisconsin, I spent of my time. In Platteville, the year was 1845, when I went to work in the Big Bevins mine. Pull out my short shovel, my pick and my auger, 1 foot in the bucket, 1 hand on the line. They lowered us down where Galena was waiting, a vein of lead ore in the Big Bevins mine. Crawl into the bear hole with hands and knees bleeding, muck out the rough ore, Lord, it's breaking my spine. With no light to see but my small stickin' Tommy, I labored a year in the Big Bevins mine.
Mm.
And I'll stop it there. But
you also tell the story of one of the miners who was buried in the mine, who lived in the mine.
Which is, and that's essentially the entire song, that this miner gets a job being a trimmer, which is another vocabulary word. A trimmer was the first guy back into the mine after they were blasting. And he went in with a long stick or something and poked at the walls and the ceiling to make sure that it wasn't going to collapse.
Mm.
And in my song, it does collapse.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And he's buried, except that his picture is on the flag of Wisconsin.
Yes.
And that was the leap of imagination. When I came out of the mine after the tour, there was a Wisconsin flag flapping in the breeze. I saw the miner on it, and I went, ka-ching. That's how you know, he died. He's not nameless, but he's almost nameless. But his picture is memorialized on the flag of Wisconsin, which I made up.
Yeah.
But it's a nice connection.
Yes, it is. It was striking to me, and I'm sure very striking to you, how hard it was. The people who were lumberjacks, the people who were miners, the people who were on the Great Lakes. What a hard life. And it wasn't that long ago, David.
No, it wasn't. And, I mean, even today, being a lumberjack is a very hard job, except they now have chainsaws and tractors and, you know, mechanical stuff. Can you imagine having to get up before dawn in the middle of Wisconsin's winter, 20 below zero, going out into the middle of the woods and cutting down trees bigger around than you could reach using hand tools?
Mm.
Mm.
Right.
And then riding the logs down the rivers in the springtime, which is kind of like surfing, but it's a whole lot more dangerous and a lot colder.
Mm-hmm. You talk about the fact that there were fights. People, because they were exhausted in the nature of the work, could kind of get on each other's nerves.
Yeah.
So they started to have music.
Mm-hmm. One of and this is something somebody told me. I think I was up in, I believe it was Leona, Wisconsin, singing at a nursing home, and an old lumberjack told me, well, you know, there was a company that wouldn't hire you unless you could sing. And the point was, when you had time on your hands and you're all tired and grouchy, you might get into a fight. But if everybody was singing and playing musical instruments, it gave them something to do. The other thing about the fighting, which most people don't realize, is if you talk about, say, Danish and Swedish and Norwegian, they were fighting back in their homeland. And a lot of the folks got the heck out of there because of the fighting. But you put these guys across from each other at a table for supper, of course they're going to get into politics and start fighting each other because they were fighting back in the homeland. That's something that, you know, you don't really think about. But, yeah, these guys didn't like each other back in Europe. So you stick them at a table in Wisconsin, well, they're still going to have problems.
So people from that part of the world became lumberjacks. There were many Scandinavians.
Most assuredly Scandinavians because – I mean, they can take the temperatures. You know, they have a whole culture that is used to dealing with extreme cold. And, I mean, you know, people, if you move from one place to another, you tend to gravitate to the place that looks kind of like home. So if you go to Erin, Wisconsin, it kind of looks like Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go to, you know, New Berlin, well, not anymore, but New Berlin probably looked like Germany at the time.
Mm.
And you go up to Scandinavia, Wisconsin, and Iola. looks like Scandinavia.
Yes, it does.
So, I mean, you know, you gravitate to the place that looks like home. And absolutely, the Scandinavians were master wood crafters. And, I mean, the Viking ships alone tells you that.
So do we need to do My Name is Jan Janssen?
Oh, sure.
Okay. And this was a Carl Sandburg?
Carl Sandburg collected this, I think, but he's the one I learned it from. Huh. And Carl Sandburg did live in Milwaukee at one time. He was the secretary to Emil Seidel. So he picked up on songs, and he created a book called The American Songbag of folk songs all over the United States. But he does this one, and it's just a joke song.
Mm-hmm. It's fun.
Yep. My name is Jan Janssen. I come from Wisconsin. I work in the lumber woods there. When I go down the street, the people I meet, they say, "What's your name?" That's your part, by the way.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
What's your name?
And I say, "My name is Jan Janssen. I come from Wisconsin. I work in the lumber woods there." Then I go down the street to people I meet. They say, "Hey,
what's your name?"
I tell them again, "My name is Jan Janssen. I come from Wisconsin. So there." And usually you do it about 7 or 8 cycles before you get to that. But
right.
Yeah.
David Drake is our guest, and we're learning the history of Wisconsin. He does performances and has for a long, long time. I hope you've had the great pleasure to hear him at your school or at your senior center. But he'll be doing this for a long time, so maybe you'll have an opportunity to
I'm
have
not retired.
No, why retire? When
Never.
You do this for a living, why retire?
I was going to say, you can say the same thing.
I know, I could, couldn't I? 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. Email for us is talk@wpr.org. And our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. We'll take your calls in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. David Drake is our guest in our Milwaukee studios this morning, and we start phone calls with Cirilla from Milwaukee. Hello, Cirilla.
Well, Poso.
Hello.
And McQuitch to David for all of his wonderful, wonderful volunteer time he does at Great Spirit Congregation. I just think David is, after seeing him play, and he does the flute playing during our tobacco ceremonies. He is a true Wisconsin treasure.
Yes, he is. Yeah,
thank you. McQuitch.
McQuitch to you.
Mm-hmm. What are you saying?
McQuitch. That's thank you.
Oh.
I'm the song leader for the songs in English at the Congregation of the Great Spirit, which is a Native American Catholic church on 11th and Lapham here in Milwaukee. And it's a wonderful mix of cultures. And me being, you know, Polish kid, I feel like, you know, I've inherited or been adopted by a whole bunch of grandmas and grandpas who protect me.
Oh, nice. Thank you, Cirilla, so much for your call. Dan in Drummond, hi.
Hi. Myself, one of the things that I always thought is in your schools and that when they're teaching history, they should actually teach the history of the town or of the area first, because some of the more interesting things that that happen in a small town, such as in Wisconsin, I think that would open up a broader teaching of history of the world or of the United States.
Absolutely. And they used to, and things are changing now, but usually the sequence was they would teach local history, perhaps in third grade, state history in fourth grade, and then United States history in fifth grade. Now, with the advent of No Child Left Behind and cuts in funding and all of teaching to the test and stuff, things like music and history are pretty much being eliminated from the schools because they just don't have time to do it anymore. But yes, I love – one of the things I try to do in my show is when I'm in a given town, and I'll use Milwaukee because it's the easy one, I ask the kids if they know what the name of their town means.
Mm-hmm.
And Milwaukee means gathering of the waters or by the waters, either one. But it's because we have three rivers that flow into Lake Michigan, and this is where the rivers gather – and it's also where the people gathered to pray and trade and interact long before even the fur traders were in. This is, of course, where the fur traders put up their trading post, because you could get to this location from pretty much any direction by water.
And what about the name Wisconsin? You include that in your show.
There's some debate about that. The name Wisconsin, according to Marquette, was the River of the Flowering Banks. It is also referred to as Gathering of Waters. The first governor of Wisconsin, it was Wisconsin Territory, Dodge, said that the name Wisconsin meant a good place to build a home, but he was selling real estate around Madison at the time.
Of course.
So I think that might have been more of a sales slogan.
Right.
But you know, they don't actually. There's whenever you're taking a Native American word and putting it into another language, something in the essence is lost. And a very good example is the town of Manitowoc. And Manitowoc comes from Manadu or Jimanadu, which means the great good spirit in all things. But it also means the great mystery.
Mm.
So it's not just the great good spirit. It's that great big wonderful creation all around us that is so vast we could never encapsulate it with our minds. So it's the great mystery.
It's a beautiful name, isn't it? Manitowoc.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Milwaukee
and
is as
Manitoba,
well.
Manitoba, all of those words are root out of Manitou.
Now, get ready to play on Wisconsin. Because there were a couple songs that, alas, alas, people in New York can never remember if we're Milwaukee or if we're Minneapolis. It drives me crazy all
the
time. But but in terms of songs, a couple of our famous songs on Wisconsin was written from Minnesota.
Yep. It was written in 1913, and it was by the University of Minnesota had a contest or something to write a new fight song for the University of Minnesota. And Carl Beck, who was a former University of Wisconsin student, wrote the words to a tune that was used during the Civil War by Lieutenant General Arthur MacArthur, who was the father of Douglas MacArthur.
Mm. Hmm.
And his battle cry was on Wisconsin. Hmm. So that's kind of on the side. Well, the guy didn't win the Minnesota contest.
So they gave it to
Wisconsin. So he took it and he submitted it to Wisconsin.
It's a great story.
And, then they were using it as a state song, but it wasn't actually declared the state song until 1959 by the legislature, and the legislature figured they couldn't have a football song as our state song, so they changed the words to be very pro-Wisconsin. But they weren't singing a football song anymore. They were singing there's a word for it, but, you know, it's a cheerleading song, but it's not about football. On Wisconsin, on Wisconsin, grand old Badger State. We, thy loyal sons and daughters, hail thee good and great. On Wisconsin, on Wisconsin, champion of the right. Forward our motto, God will give thee might.
Thank you, David. All right. Thanks, Dan, for your call. We're taking phone calls for David Drake. Our number, 800-486-8655. Peter is calling from Door County. Hi, Peter. Hello, Peter. All right, Peter, I don't know where you are. We'll get back to you. Betsy in River Falls. Hi.
Hi. Good morning to both of you. I have heard tell that the St. Croix River near Stillwater, three native languages called it the river where fish sleep, because I have heard that it is like over 100 feet deep at Stillwater. And I would like to know if this is true or if I just have to quit drinking brandy.
I actually have no idea on that one. That sounds like something, because it's right near Stillwater, Minnesota. You might have to check into Minnesota history, or up that neck of the woods is more Chippewa, I think. So if there's some source on the Chippewa language, they might be able to tell you what it actually means.
Okay, I'll go try and find that.
Yeah,
thank you very much.
But I don't actually speak Native. I can do things in Native American languages because I learned them by rote, not because I'm a master speaker of them.
Thank you.
Same way as I can do something in Polish, but I don't speak Polish. I just, you learn it by rote.
Mm-hmm. I like the story, though. If it's not true, it should be, so yeah. She could make it true. Let's talk a little bit about the importance of water, because it's huge. The Great Lakes are huge. The rivers are huge. You include a map of what Wisconsin would have looked like to the explorers, and it really is quite remarkable. No roads. It's all rivers. It's Lake Michigan and other lakes.
And when you think back to the days of travel being, well, initially by canoe, I mean, that was it. And then eventually we started having schooners and things like that coming into the Great Lakes. But the only way to get around really was by water, because it was a long time before there was even foot trails connecting everything around here. And, you know, like even on a day like today, I wouldn't want to walk from here to Green Bay on the Green Bay-Chicago Trail. You know, let's face it, that's not a real great idea. And it wasn't until about 1851 that trains actually hooked up Milwaukee to Chicago and the rest of the East. So prior to at least round numbers 1851, if you wanted to get to Milwaukee, you pretty much came here by water. If you wanted to get to Wisconsin in general, you took a boat, maybe a canoe in the early days, but a schooner later on, and then steamboats to the port towns, which were Milwaukee, Green Bay, or if you were able to portage up to Lake Superior, then you could get to a place like Ashland. But there was no connection up the St. Mary's River back then. That came later on. And Milwaukee was totally isolated for the winter months. I mean, any mail, any product, anything you wanted to get in or out. Once the lake got nasty in November and until it unfroze in hopefully March, going to be a little later this year, you know, nothing went in or out. So, yeah, we were a landlocked place, but it was strictly accessible by water until at least the trails melted and you could use those, and then they were muddy.
Can you sing a song of the Great Lakes?
Oh, I sure can.
Thank you.
I'll do this on a concertina, which is something a sailor would have played.
And describe what this instrument is.
A lot of people look at this instrument and say, oh, that's an accordion. No, it's not. It's a giant harmonica. And if you picture, any of the pirate movies or even Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs or Peter Pan, you always see some character in the background, you know, like Doc in Snow White, pumping away on this hexagonal-shaped squeeze box. And that is very literally a sailor's concertina. So it's a hoot when I do this for kids because they all know what it is. Mm. They've seen it in cartoons, but they've never actually heard one. Tell me, where do you come from and where are you bound? On the blue Great Lakes waters are rolling. Where a ship can be lost or a friend can be found. Singing, where do you come from and where are you bound? To the port of Green Bay our course will be set. In the blue Great Lakes waters a-rollin'. In the wake of Marquette, where the first port was found. Singing, where do you come from and where are you bound? Tell me, where do you come from and where are you bound? On the blue Great Lakes waters are rolling. Where a ship can be lost or a friend can be found. Singing, where do you come from and where are you bound?
Oh, it's such a nice sound. I like that.
And that type of song is known in the business as a zipper song, because I could actually insert the name of any Wisconsin town into the song and on the spot make up a verse about it.
Is the concertina hard to play, David?
Piece of cake.
Is it?
Yeah. And people go, yeah. If you can play a harmonica, you already know how to play a concertina. A concertina is nothing but a bunch of harmonicas, literally a bunch of harmonicas inside an air pump. So instead of blowing on the harmonica with your mouth, you're squeezing air with your hands. And once you understand that, you know, breath out, breath in equals push in, pull out, as soon as you make that connection, then those buttons under your fingers are just harmonicas.
Oh.
And I've seen so many, I've told this to many, many harmonica players who go, duh. And the second they make that connection, they go, of course. Mm-hmm. And they're off to the races.
Yeah. Let's go to Patty in North Woods, Wisconsin. Hi, Patty.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I guess I had a comment. First of all, I think this is wonderful what you're doing and really, really healthy. And it's a very refreshing show. Sometimes I think I get a little overwhelmed by the seriousness of a lot of the issues talked about on NPR, which is great, but it gets overwhelming. But I was wondering if you have any natural history or environmental songs.
Oh, yes, he does.
I do. I don't lean on that too heavily in this particular show because I'm mostly talking about the people of Wisconsin who lived here. But the very early in the show, I have a song called The Rivers of Wisconsin because this is leading up to the French voyagers coming here and paddling around on the rivers and then making the maps. So, and this is another Zipper song. The original song, I think, was a song called The Rivers of Texas.
No.
Yeah. Right. And
the rivers of Texas.
Yeah, well, this is a folk singer thing. I mean, we call this plagiarism in other fields, but folk singers will take a song and adapt it to the specific time and place that they're singing in. Very much like taking on Minnesota and making it on Wisconsin. Okay, well, there was this old song called The Rivers of Texas, and that's, I think, the earliest example of the song. A folk singer by the name of Win Strachey, who is the guy who started the Chicago Folk Music Center, back in about 1935, he took the song and he plugged in Rivers of Illinois. Okay. And then Dan Ketting and Roxanne Neat took the Rivers of Illinois song and plugged in Wisconsin Rivers. And that's where I learned it. So, I mean, you know, so long as you got a map of the – so long as you're not doing Nebraska – because every river is the Platte, but it works for most states.
And you'll play some of it.
Yep.
All right. What instrument, David? What is this?
Because you've already heard the concertina, which is what I use in the show. I'll do this one on a dulcimer.
Oh.
And it's an Appalachian instrument, but that's
nice.
Okay.
Great.
I crossed the broad Flambeau. I portaged the Fox, swum the Little Copper, and followed the Black. The sugar is muddy, the St. Croix is clear. Down by the Eau Claire I courted my dear. It's li-la-li-li-la-li, give me your hand. Li-la-li-li-la-li, give me your hand. Li-la-li-li-la-li, give me your hand. There's many a river that crosses our land.
Nice.
So that's just a verse and a chorus from it.
Now, why did the dulcimer come from Appalachia?
The dulcimer actually is an ancient word. The dulcimer is mentioned in the Bible. But I think, and I'm speculating, but I think dulcimer, which the root of that word is the Latin dulce, which means sweet, and the Greek melos, which means song. So you have dulcimer, dulce melos, sweet song. I think that any box with strings on it was considered a dulcimer, as opposed to a harp, which would be a C-shaped piece of wood without a backing on it. And the reason you've got the box is because it becomes it increases the volume.
Mm.
But yeah, so, you know, the word dulcimer, the idea has probably been around for thousands of years, and everybody in the world has taken some sort of object. And before I played the banjo, well, that comes from the African banjar, where they took a gourd and they put a stick in it and put a string on it, and they had a banjar, which came to America with the slave trade. And then the Irish and Scottish folks who had moved up into the Appalachian Mountains, because it looks like the Highlands, they picked up on the banjo, and now banjo is a mainstay of Irish music, but it's an African instrument. This one, oddly enough, if you listen hard, it's tuned like a bagpipe. In the tuning I use.
Oh.
There's a gazillion tunings.
Huh.
But you take the high road and I'll take the... It's this tuning happens to be very much like a bagpipe.
Hmm.
So you've got the drone. which would be the things sticking out of the top of the bagpipe, and then the little tantor that you play, is your high string. So by and large, you generally play on the high-voiced string and let the other two notes drone.
Oh, that's so nice. I really like that sound, don't you?
Oh, I love it. And this, you know, when people ask me, you know, well, how do you learn these things? The dulcimer is probably, at least to my mind, the simplest stringed instrument you could possibly ever try to learn.
Really?
Anybody can play At Least You Are My Sunshine on a dulcimer. I can teach you to play it on a dulcimer in about a minute because it's just sliding your finger up and down the string that's closest to you. But that drone makes it feel very full.
Oh, that's so. Where do you get that dulcimer? I want to go buy a dulcimer somewhere.
The instruments I play are handmade. And when I started doing this about 30 years ago, there's a series of books called the Foxfire Books. Mm-hmm. And they're in practically all the libraries, and folks our age know about them because back in the 1960s, it was a back to the land thing, and people were going to live off the grid, and they suddenly realized they had no idea how to live without electricity. So they went up into the Appalachians and talked to these old guys who never had electricity in their whole lives and wrote this down in a series of books called the Foxfire Books, How to Build an Outhouse, How to Build a Wall, you know, all of that. There's a chapter in Volume 3 of How to Build Your Own Banjo and How to Build Your Own Dulcimer, which I did back 30-some years ago. And then when people actually started asking me to do this professionally, I kind of went, you know, I'm not that good at building these things. So I took the designs and the ones that I had built to professional instrument makers and had them build a really quality instrument. But if you go to, I'll mention one of WPR's sponsors.
Sure.
A place like Spruce Tree Music in Madison.
Okay.
Or Golden Ring Folklore Center in Manitowoc. I bet you they got dulcimers, and if they don't, they can tell you who does.
Thank you, David. Whole new life may be awaiting us.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. Let's go next to Peter in Door County. Hi, Peter. I don't know what happened to you, Peter, so I'm sorry. We'll take more phone calls momentarily. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. David Drake is our guest, and we're talking about Wisconsin Sing, a musical history of Wisconsin, which David is presenting to school groups and senior citizen groups all over the state of Wisconsin. It's really very, very well done. As you can tell, he really knows his history, and he's so musical. The portion of what he's been doing in front of schools will be featured in a special program on Milwaukee Public Radio on Saturday.
Milwaukee Public Television.
I'm sorry, television.
Yeah, yes. I know. It's easy to do. It's at 5 o'clock Saturday on a program called The Arts Page. And I suspect they'll do about 6 minutes of what was a half an hour interview, but then you can actually see some of this stuff.
Yeah, it's worth seeing. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. David Drake is our guest, and let's go to Barbara in Green Bay next. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, good morning. This is an absolutely wonderful program. When I was a child, and I'm 72 now, probably I was in early grade school, I remember an absolutely beautiful song called Beautiful Wisconsin, and then it went on Nature's Wonderland, and it talked about silvery lakes and rocky dells and the pine-scented air. It was beautiful, but I haven't heard it. Even when I was a teenager, I no longer heard it. Can't find any sheet music or anything about it. And I'm wondering if David has ever heard of it.
I have, and I have the sheet music
David.
In my files. Huh. I don't have that one memorized because I tried to work that into this particular program, and it is so laid back and so sweet that if it's 9 o'clock in the morning and you're facing 300 kids in a gym, you just have to do something that's got a lot more, which is why I do On Wisconsin at the end of the show, because A, they at least know the tune. And when I do this show, I do it with slides so that if I'm singing about lumberjacks, I have historic slides of lumberjacks showing on the screen next to me. And I change the slides with a foot pedal. But when the sing-along chorus comes up, and I tried to make all of the songs sing-alongs, the words come up on the screen. It's like the old bouncing ball trick. And so everybody can sing along on the chorus without previously knowing the song. And Beautiful Wisconsin, I tried it. It just didn't make it. So I decided I would do On Wisconsin, the official version, as opposed to the football version.
David, is that sheet music available anywhere that you know?
Well, if nothing else, send me an email, and I can probably, make a JPEG of it. And
probably not copyrighted anymore.
I have no idea.
Can you give me your email, or could someone give it to me off
sure.
air?
Well, I'll give you my website, which, you know, this got email connections, and it also has connections on this whole DVD I just did. It's davidhbdrake.com.
Okay.
And it's very important that you have the HB in there, which is Honey Bun or He's Bald or Romeus Bosch, however you want to remember that. The reason I do that is there's five other David Drakes in Milwaukee alone, much less naturally. So if you just Google David Drake, you're never going to find me.
Okay.
You need David H.B. Drake, and that's
got
all
it
one
down.
Word.
And anything, .com. Any other port I'm supposed to go to? Or?
Well, I mean, just to give me an email, there's a button that says contact me.
Okay.
And, you know, if you want to actually see a video of the Wisconsin show, a demo video about 7 minutes, it's that same address / Wisconsin, which is the word Wisconsin with a G.
Very clever.
.htm.
Very clever.
And oh, excellent.
I don't know why it needs the .htm, but it does to make the thing open up.
It's thank you,
Barbara,
very, very
Barbara,
much.
Before you go, give us a line of Beautiful Wisconsin, please.
Can I?
Would you?
Sure.
Okay.
Beautiful Wisconsin, nature's wonderland, your home, sweet home to me. Oh, yeah, I remember that song.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Nice. Thank you.
Yeah.
Let's go to Dale in River Falls. Hi, Dale.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
A great program. I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I'm wondering if you know of any or if there were any favorite Wisconsin-specific Civil War songs.
Boy, I'm not a Civil War historian. There had to be. There absolutely had to be. And I'll bet you anything there's a song about Old Abe, which was the mascot eagle of the Iron Brigade. That would be something I'd have to, and I probably should have researched because this is the 150th anniversary of the Civil War. But specifically, I'm not pulling anything out of my brain that is Wisconsin-centric. There's a gazillion Civil War songs. Matter of fact, a fellow by the name of Sparky Rucker will be coming to the Lake County Folk Club end of this month, and he is a Civil War. He does an entire program of Civil War songs.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, a fellow that I've been playing with lately, Doug Estee, I'll bet you would know the answer to that because he does a thing on Civil War history.
But, so let us know. We can put that on our Facebook page or something.
Mm-hmm.
Let us know. That might be a good thing for you to look into as
probably.
We celebrate the.
Oh yeah,
if there are songs.
It's just one of those things. I've been so busy with this. That's one of those that got off of my screen.
You can't
somewhere.
Do everything.
It's on the bottom of the pile somewhere.
Yeah. Thanks, Dale, very much. Sandy in Milwaukee. Hi.
Oh, hi.
Hi, Sandy.
Hi, David.
Hi, Sandy. Yes.
I have been enjoying singing along with you on this program, as opposed to other times that I've enjoyed. Kathleen, thank you. This is just a joy. This is the kindest, most generous person and performer I know. And I have a question, David, about the concertina.
Yes.
You said that it's like a harmonica?
It is a harmonica.
Okay, well, how do you figure the buttons on an in and out?
The same way, if you know how to blow a scale on the harmonica, start in center,
sure.
Blow in, draw out because it's double reeded. So in, out, move to the next one to the right, in, out, next one to the right, in, out, and then you go out, in. So, you know, in, out, in, out, in, out, out, in, with your breath. Do that with your hands. Push, pull, push, pull, push, pull, pull, push.
Okay, so
starting
you're
with
doing
the center
the buttons
button.
And the pushing and pulling at the same time.
But if you equate if you've got a C harmonica and a C concertina, the middle button is middle C, and you either push or blow at the center, and then you draw on that same one to get the next half step up, and then in out in out in out out in.
Fabulous!
Yeah.
Oh,
so
that's
in,
great.
In Germany, the instrument is called a harmonicum.
Oh.
And, you know, it's a harmonica in a box.
Hmm.
That's all it is. They make these little kid toys that, you know, they look like a little accordion, and they only have one row of buttons. But in fact, what that is a pump harmonica. It's about $20 at a toy store.
Hmm.
And if you can play harmonica, you can actually wrestle a tune out of one of those things, if you can get your hands around it.
Thank you, Sandy. Have fun playing. I'm sure you will. Lou in Shorewood. Hi.
Hi. This is Lou David.
Oh, hi.
From Shorewood, yes. Just wanted to talk about that trip we took about 3 years ago up through Death's Door on a Dennis Sullivan.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
And we went to a little Manitou Island.
Yep.
Across over the lake. Mm-hmm. And this is a town that used to be, well, it was a mining town. They took the, and they made iron.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a lot of.
I should remember the name
of
the town.
So they were able to melt, you know, have the furnaces there. Anyway, when we first pulled in there, you were going to be playing and singing up on the main stage up there, this deserted area where it's mostly, it's a lot of people there that come and have their cottages and stuff. Anyway, I went up and down the piers there and says, hey, we're going to have some entertainment. I felt like, a barker or something like this. We're going to have some entertainment at the big building. I forget what they call it.
We did it at the town, on the town hall stage.
Yeah, and that was a lot of fun.
Yep, I'm trying to remember the name of the town, but it's about two bays over from Escanaba, Michigan, and it's sort of like Old World, Wisconsin. It's a historic mine smelting port, which the ships like the Dennis Sullivan would come into and load the processed ore onto the ship. The thing that was interesting about that particular voyage was that it was the first time a Great Lakes schooner went through Death's Door in maybe 75 years from the last of the true working schooners. And I mean, Dennis Sullivan is a working schooner, but it is, you know, it's very much like my instruments. Mm-hmm. It's a reproduction made out of new materials that looks old and functions the way the old things do. But I mean, for instance, my banjo looks like it's 200 years old. Well, it's 30 years old.
Hmm.
But, you know, if I got a 200-year-old banjo, it probably wouldn't play. So.
And what did they used to be made of? You say that in the performance, don't you? The banjos? Was it the banjo?
Originally, banjos were made from a gourd, from a calabash in Africa, hollowed out, dried out. If you take, it'd be like a pumpkin, is like a calabash. Dry it out, scoop it out, put a skin on top, you got a little drum. Now, if you put that into the curve of what it would mount to a bow and arrow and something to connect the string to the drum head, plunk on it, that's a banjar.
Mm. Thank you, Lou, very much for the call. I want to give you at least a minute to end this program, so let's just say a few things. One is your website is?
David HB.
David HB.
Like honey bun. DavidHBDrake.com. And to get to the Wisconsin-specific stuff, you either go on the news button or the marketplace button, which has also got the CDs and stuff. And that's how you can also connect to the little video. And I will be playing live at the Museum of Wisconsin Art.
Oh.
For their grand opening.
Oh, great.
Which this is wonderful, doing Wisconsin songs at the Museum of Wisconsin Art in West Bend. I'll be there Sunday, April 7th at noon.
All right.
So that's probably somebody you ought to get a show about, too.
Yes, we've been meaning to do that,
because that's a big thing to have a museum dedicated to the arts, plural, of Wisconsin, not just visual, but the other arts.
Yeah, thank you so much. It was just a delightful hour. All the best to you. I hope you are able to go to many, many schools all over Wisconsin to those people who haven't heard you, because it's a terrific performance. David Drake, our guest this hour, we're going to give him a little less than a minute to play whatever he wants. We'll do that first. Let's thank Rhonda Fanning for producing this program, Katie Madsen for on-air production in Milwaukee, and here's David Drake.
This one's not in the show, but Wisconsin Public Radio listeners would know it. There's the town. Yes, it's better seen in early light of morning. Looks run down. Father wrote that it's been losing since the new highway went through. Here's the place. I was born and raised with seven at the table.
looks so small. Wonder how this farm can raise a family comfortably at all. I want to show you fields I reaped and gathered as I grew. I wanted you to see the old Wisconsin that I knew. If you remember George McCulloch's North Country Notebook, that was his out song.